Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And a very good morning to you and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine. We're glad you're here. My name is Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat today. Dr. Umat, welcome back. We missed you.
Hey.
Dr. Umat's earplug just fell out.
Yeah. Uh-oh. I am glad to be back. This earplug is defeating me today.
Oh,
you know,
no.
It just serves me right for going away for a while and tells me that I can't go afford to go away for a long time again.
Your problem is you're not hooking it over your ear.
No matter which way I try today, Jerry.
Okay. See if you can fix her earplug for
there
her.
There we go. Please? And while I'm fixing her, let's have Dr. Mixon give us a little bit of an update.
<All right>.
Okay.
Okay, I'll do an update. What the heck?
But yeah, you're so used to doing them now.
We're going to let Lynette go sneaking by first, however, so that she can put your earplug in. Okay. We have to plug Dr. Umat's ears because otherwise all that brain just kind of flows right
flows out.
The problem with being so damn smart. So
I don't know about that, Jerry.
Anyway, welcome to Longevity Medical. Yeah. I think the thing we're going to talk about most today is, or at least to start, is breast cancer.
Yeah, because it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
It is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And we're making pretty darn good progress in diagnosing breast cancer. We're making pretty good progress in treating breast cancer. But what we're not making progress in is preventing breast cancer.
Yeah.
And if we really want to prevent breast cancer, we need to start when women are in their 30s, not their 50s or 60s.
Yeah.
And we need to recognize that mammograms, while useful at diagnosing breast cancer earlier, don't prevent it.
Not preventative. Right?
Does
exactly.
Not
they're the only thing we do for prevention, but they're not preventative.
But they're not for prevention. They're for early diagnosis. And that's the thing that irritates me is we mistake early diagnosis for prevention.
Yeah.
Prevention would mean not letting women's testosterone, estradiol, and progesterone fall on the floor. You know, there is a misconception in this world right now, even among some physicians, that estrogen causes breast cancer, and it doesn't. Okay. If estrogen caused breast cancer, we'd see the most breast cancer in young women because that's when they have the most estrogen.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, it's true, estrogen is a mitogen. It causes tissue to grow and heal and repair. That's all good. But the fact that it causes tissue to grow gets mixed up with cancers because, well, cancers grow too.
Yep.
That's true. But breasts grow from about 12 or 13 years old until maturity.
Mm-hmm.
And then old breast tissue is dying and new breast tissue needs to be replaced. And so breast tissue needs to continue growing. You need that mitogenic estrogen to give you healthy breast tissue. What gets missed is the fact that estrogen is not a woman's primary hormone. A woman in her youth, while her estrogen is at its peak, is going to have 2 to 3 times more testosterone than estrogen circulating in her blood. And testosterone is a very potent anti-breast cancer hormone. It kills breast cancer. And so, yes, you got the estrogen, mitogen causing things to grow, but you got the testosterone there killing any breast cancer cells that try to grow. And so young women with high estrogen and higher testosterone do just fine because the testosterone is protecting them. As women age, estrogen, testosterone, progesterone are all declining. And as they decline by about age 50 on average, the progesterone gets so low that their uterus can't cycle. And so they stop having periods. And at that point, we say, oh, she's menopausal. And the mistake was people thought it was the estrogen lack that caused it. It wasn't. It was the progesterone lack. But here's the scary part. The protective testosterone falls even faster than the estrogen and progesterone. A woman at 50 has lost half of her estrogen and 85% of her testosterone. Mm. And that testosterone is now so low, it can't provide the protection that she needs anymore. Mm-hmm. What we now know is that if we give women in their early 50s testosterone along with their estrogen, we can cut their risk of breast cancer by about two-thirds. Mm-hmm. Here's the really neat part. If we give it to them for a long period, start them in their 50s and give it to them for 10 years, we cut the risk of breast cancer by 85%. Mm-hmm. For every 100 women that would normally get a breast cancer, only 15 will if we give them the testosterone, starting in their mid-50s. Breast cancer doesn't start in the mid-50s.
Yeah, that's right.
The process begins in their 30s. In their 30s, their estrogen and testosterone are starting to decline. And as those hormones are declining, they start developing some atypia, that is, some slightly abnormal changes in their breast tissue. And that atypia gets worse and worse and worse as the years go by and the hormone levels continue to drop. And at some point, the atypia we now class as dysplasia, which is a more severe sign of abnormal cell growth in the breast. And 5 or 10 years after the dysplasia starts, you finally get that mutation of a malignancy. A cancer has now finally formed. But here's a really fascinating thing. Even when that cancer forms, it is so tiny, it's one cell, we can't find it. We don't know it's there. A woman will have that cancer for 3 to 10 years, on average, about 5 years, she will have that breast cancer before it gets big enough for us to even find it with the mammograms. So when we say women in their mid-50s have a rising risk of breast cancer, what we're really saying is that's when we find it.
Yeah.
Not when they got it.
Right.
But the process we need to interrupt started in her 30s.
Yeah. And, you know, the Women's Health Initiative study also showed that women who are placed on hormone replacement therapy early actually have a 30% less chance of developing breast cancer.
Fascinating. If you start women within 10 years of menopause, so they still have half their estrogen, but only 15% of their testosterone and only about 25% of their progesterone. If you start them on just the estrogen at that point, you cut the risk of breast cancer by about 30%.
Yeah.
You cut the risk of heart attacks by 40%. You cut the risk of colon cancer by 40%.
And dementia.
And you decrease the risk of dementia and this age-related cognitive decline. The fact is the human body, the female human body is designed to have robust amounts of estrogen, but even more testosterone.
Yeah.
And yet for some reason, when women are treated for menopausal symptoms, they're not looking at breast cancer. Mm-hmm. They're saying, oh, she's having hot flashes and mood swings. We'll treat that.
Yeah.
We won't prevent her breast cancer. We won't prevent her heart attack. We won't prevent her stroke. We won't prevent her colon cancer. But we will stop her hot flashes with 6 months of estrogen.
Yeah.
And then we'll take it away.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense, does it?
It makes no sense at all.
Yeah.
It's totally irrational. It doesn't fit human physiology in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
It's done because doctors as a group, Samara and I included, doctors visualize themselves as a herd of herbivores on the plane, peacefully grazing, going about our business, and we're being circled with predators with law degrees, ready to pick us off if we get out on the edge at all. And it's that fear of getting picked off if you get on the edge. So doctors all crowd to be in the center. Let somebody else take the risk. Let somebody else get on the edge. Yep. We want to be in the center. We want to be compliant to all of the regulations and recommendations that anybody on the planet makes for us.
That's so true, Jerry. Physicians are scared.
They're cowards.
Well,
like
I don't blame them.
I am one.
Yeah, we spend our whole life trying to get those degrees so that we can do something with them. And then, like this, somebody can take it away.
Yes. Some regulatory commission can come in and just whack you. Yeah. And it doesn't have to make sense. They don't have to be right because they have the power.
Yeah.
And in government, we still use the medieval philosophy that might makes right. If you have the power to do it, you have the right to do it. And it's stupid.
Yeah.
And it's counterproductive for the society. Yeah. But that's the way government agencies work. And medical boards are government agencies.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they are appointed. And they are appointed because they are politically correct and complacent and compliant and do what everybody else does. And if you do anything different, you are at risk. But the problem is, if you want to give people good care, if you want to give people the best care, if you're out in the front of the herd, you are at some risk as a physician, but you're providing the best care for your patient. And I think that I would love to prevent the women in America from getting breast cancer.
I agree with you.
And that means we really need to start early.
Yeah.
And we need to be doing something more than just following the estrogens. We need to follow the testosterone, the thyroid, the estrogen, the dehydroepiandrosterone, the pregnenolone, the growth hormone, all of the hormones that make us strong and vital and healthy in our youth. And we are losing as we get older.
Yeah. And we know that these strategies will reduce risk for cancer, especially breast cancer, since that's the topic right now.
That's right. Lynette is waving her arms over there, basically signaling us to go to a break.
Yes, so we're going to take a quick
break here. Stop my rant, and we'll go to a break.
All right. We'll pick that ramp up,
Ramp up the rant.
I'll give you the phone number to call in if you have questions for either one of the doctors, Dr. Jerry Mixon or Dr. Samira Umat. That number is 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll be back with your calls and more information as this is October Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Stay right there. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, and we're taking your questions.
You didn't let us dance.
Oh, I didn't. Okay.
No, that's okay, because on the video, we can't have the music.
Oh,
that's right.
No,
yes.
We're not allowed to have the music.
Oh,
on the
that'll
video.
Look really odd if we
have
that.
We have to dance in silence. They're suffering in silence. We have to dance in silence.
I don't think I can sing, so I'm not going to, you know, torture the watchers and the listeners.
Dr. Mixon and I will handle the singing. You do the dancing.
That's right.
All right.
Shake your bangles. Do your thing.
All right. I can do that. I can change bulbs.
That works. Changing the bulbs. All right. Here is our phone number to call in today. Don't wait until the very end. We want to get you in that call queue and talk with you about whatever is bothering you about your health, aging, maybe your recent diagnosis. Here is the number to get through. It's 206-421-5757. And we're going to take our first caller, Betty, calling in from Issaquah today. Welcome, Betty.
Hello, Betty.
Hi. Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have questions about AFib. Recently, my husband was playing golf, got off the finished 18th hole, got into the clubhouse, passed out. Oh. EMTs were called, went to the emergency room, found out he was in AFib. And then we went to cardiologist, did the testing, found out he has persistent AFib. Okay. And now we're starting to talk about remedies. He's asymptomatic. He had no idea he was in AFib, and he still has no symptoms when he's in AFib. He's got one of those watches that tells him when he's in AFib. And he goes, look, I'm in AFib. I don't even feel anything. So he's on an anticoagulant. He's on Abixapan, generic for Eliquis. And now we're trying to figure out, the cardiologist has recommended ablation. They've got some new technology over there at Overlake, where they're using, I think they said, sound waves. And anyways, want to know your opinion, Doc.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm a little perplexed.
Okay.
When he's in atrial fib, he's, first of all, it's not persistent, because if it were persistent, he'd still be in atrial fib. He goes in and out.
Yep.
But when he goes in,
that's correct.
He's not aware that he has the atrial fib. What was going on when he passed out then? That wasn't atrial fib.
Something. He was smoking a cigar.
Out. I'm sorry, what?
He was smoking a cigar.
Well,
that's the only thing I.
A bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, I worry because when his diagnostic episode occurred, he lost consciousness. He fell down. He's in atrial fibrillation. He's not falling down. He's not having any symptoms at all. So, yes, the atrial fibrillation needs to be addressed. But if he were my brother, I'd be saying, wait a minute. Fib isn't giving him a symptom. Whatever happened at that golf course made him fall on the floor.
Yeah.
That can't have been the same thing that's giving him no symptoms. There was something else going on.
He might have had ischemia or something too, Jerry, right?
Yeah, and that's my concern.
Yeah.
So, yes, the AFib needs to be addressed, and it's being addressed appropriately.
Correct.
And the newer technologies for doing the ablations are better than the older technologies, so I'm all in favor of that. I'm just perplexed by what happened initially. That wasn't just plain AFib. Something else was going on, and my concern is I don't want it to go on again.
Sure.
I want to find out what the heck it was.
Yeah.
So you can prevent it from happening a second or third time. Because if it happens as he's at the top of the stairs and he takes a header down a flight of stairs, it's not a good thing for an elderly man.
How old is he?
How old is he, Betty, your husband?
75.
Okay. Okay, well, he's not an elderly man, then he's just a kid.
Like you, Dr. Mason.
Yep.
Because he's younger than I am. And you know, I'm not old. So.
That's right. Jerry's not old.
So if you're younger than me, you're just a kid.
That's nobody he doesn't think
Jerry's
he's old.
Is allowed to get old.
That's right.
Yes. So that's interesting. So if someone has AFib, it's not necessarily going to cause them to pass out.
No. Atrial fibrillation, on average, it reduces cardiac output about 15 to 20%, okay? So young people that have a lot of cardiac reserve, they go into atrial fib, they may notice a little flutter in their chest, but that's about it. They can drop out 15% of their cardiac output and nobody notices a thing. Older people, as we age, our hearts are not as strong, they're not pumping as efficiently, our cardiac output is dropping a bit, and so... Some elderly people, when they go into atrial fib, get very tired,
get very lethargic,
they get short of breath. Yeah, that 15 to 20% of cardiac output reduction with the fibrillation really shows up. Okay, they're obvious. Your husband apparently compensates pretty well. He gets that decline in efficiency, and he still chugs right along. But something... knocked it way down for a brief period.
It's probably maybe he threw a thrombus that blocked something, which caused him to pass out.
Yeah, but again, we don't know.
Yeah.
But so I would just counsel, don't be too complacent. We have found a problem, but I'm not convinced necessarily that it's the problem that caused him to pass out. So talk to your doctor some more.
Yeah.
Do a little more investigation. Okay?
And Overleg is pretty good with their electrophysiological studies.
They do a lot of good things. But you know, they're human beings.
Yeah.
And we as humans, we focus on one thing at a time.
Sure.
And when we find a problem, we tend to focus on fixing that problem.
We have to find a solution to that.
Yes. And what I'm afraid of is, yes, they have found a problem. Yes, it needs to be addressed. Yes, they are addressing it appropriately. Fine. I have no complaint. I'm just not sure that's why he fell down.
There might be some other second thing.
And let's see what else is going on that has not yet been identified. That's all. Okay.
Is that helpful for you, Betty?
Oh, it absolutely is. And I will follow up with that for sure. But with respect to the AFib, since he's on the anticoagulants, does he have to be on any other type of medication if we choose not to do ablation?
Not necessarily. If he is, if his rhythm is acceptable, that is, if his heart rate is, you know, between 70 and 100 or so, that's kind of the, quote, normal range, no problem. Now, if it slows way down, sometimes atrial fibrillation will slow the heart rate down to 30 or 40 or 50, and people get really lightheaded and dizzy. And sometimes it'll speed it up, and they'll be beating along at, you know, 150, 200. That gets them into trouble.
Yeah.
If he's got a good range, and it's not varying too much, and he's having no symptoms, the anticoagulation may be all he really has to have.
Yeah. Sometimes if they have a high heart rate, they'll put them on beta blockers to slow the heart rate down.
Or a calcium channel blocker. Something like that. But yeah, but these are, you know, these are things that will get used if his ventricular rate is getting out of range. So, but don't let's not borrow problems, but let's look and see what caused the initial problem that brought the atrial fib to our attention.
Okay. Good. I guess I have some homework. Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your show.
Take care.
Love you guys. Bye.
Thank you for the call, Betty. Well, that's good to know, Dr. Mixon, that both you and Dr. Umat pointed out that, you know, that may not have been, that was probably not the cause of him fainting. There's got to be something else there.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, a possibility. And once more, I haven't seen any of his studies, and I'm not really qualified to read them anyway.
Yeah.
But, but the reality is, when he, if this was his first episode of atrial fib, he may have had a bradycardic response.
Yeah.
You know, he may have gone into fib and his heart rate dropped to 30 or something, and that's why he fell. Maybe.
Yeah.
We just don't know.
Right.
I prefer to know if I can.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. All right, we have more calls on the line. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be back. And Jim, we're going to talk with you next, so stay right there if you'd like to get your call answered. And get into the call queue, here is the number to call, 206-421-5757. That number is 206-421-5757. We'll be right back. Lynette here with Dr. Samira Umat, back from her hiatus, her big adventure, and Dr. Jerry Mixon in the studio. We're taking your calls at 1-206-421-5757. And Dr. Mixon, you had a comment for our last caller, Betty, about AFib. What was that?
Well, actually, it came by way of Dr. Umat.
That's right.
And that is Dr. Umat Sunil Umat.
Yeah, that's right.
Samira's husband called in and said, with new onset atrial fibrillation, they should always do a sleep study.
Ah, okay. Okay.
So that's one more suggestion from one more of our Dr. UMATs.
Very good. Right. Team UMAT. We love
that. That's right. You got it.
Wonderful. And I love that the sleep studies nowadays don't have to be done in...
That's right. They don't.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
You can do them
at home. We now have
home.
Devices that can read your oxygenation at home.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. You can sleep more comfortably. All right. We are going to head to the phones. And if you've got questions for the doctors, get into that phone queue now at 206-421-5757, just like Jim did from Everett. Welcome to the show, Jim.
Hello, Jim from Everett.
Hi. Good morning. Let's see. I'm 79, and I have an enlarged prostate, and I was wondering if I can take testosterone. My PSA in 2018 was 0.9, and my PSA in 2022 was 1.
All right. That's pretty modest.
Wow.
Have you had prostate surgery in your youth?
No, no.
Okay. Yeah. No, those are very, very low PSAs, and I don't worry about them. Although if you came to see us, you would get another PSA.
Yeah.
But you'll get them about every three months.
Yeah, he hasn't had one in a couple of years. So, yeah, we would do another one.
Certainly.
Should do one like every 4 years or 2 years?
We do them about every 3 months, actually.
Every 3 months? Oh.
Yes. Because when we put men on testosterone, we follow them closely. We want to see what's happening. And because in older men... with low testosterone and low dehydroepiandrosterone, those anabolic hormone loads, the glandular component of the prostate shrinks up. Even though the prostate gets big, the glandular activity in it is declining. See, the prostate's not a decoration. It's there to help you get women pregnant. Okay? It provides the nutrition to keep your sperm alive for up to 3 days after intercourse. It also provides the enzymes that dissolve the mucus plug so that the sperm can get through the cervix into the uterus and run down the tubes to find an egg. Okay? So those prostatic fluids are very, very active. It's a very active hormone chemical factory. And as we age, the epithelium, the connective tissues in the prostate, proliferate, and we get more and more of that. And so the prostate is getting bigger, but the glandular component, the active part of the prostate, requires testosterone and DHEA to function. So that part of the prostate is actually shriveling up and getting small. When we put you back on testosterone and raise your levels back up, that glandular component of the prostate will start to grow again. Okay? So so now, as that glandular component is coming alive and active and trying to help you get somebody pregnant again, the PSA is going to rise. Because PSA is a function of how much prostate and how much metabolic activity is going on. So when we raise the testosterone level, PSA will rise to some extent. And there may be some modest increase in the size of the prostate, because we're now waking up the glands. If you are too close to obstruction, the testosterone could push you over that edge to obstruction. So we may want to put you on something to shrink the prostate a bit and decrease that risk of obstruction at the same time we put you on the testosterone. And
what
then we'll follow the PSAs.
It?
I'm sorry, what?
How do you shrink it? I've been using Tamsulosin and saw palmetto.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, saw palmetto actually does a better job of shrinking it than the tamsulosin. Tamsulosin relaxes the muscles so you pee better, but it doesn't actually shrink the prostate.
I see.
If you're going to shrink the prostate, you'd probably need one of the older first-generation drugs like doxazosin, Tamsazosin. Those drugs are quaternary drugs. They actually kill some prostate tissue. They also lower the risk of prostate cancer, which is really kind of nice. So Instead of the Tamsulosin, we'd probably use one of the older drugs that actually tends to shrink the prostate over time.
It's testosterone. I sent away from it's a reputable company. And just knowing what you know now, would you suggest taking it? It's in pill form.
Never should it be pill form.
Well, I mean, it's vegetarian capsules.
It doesn't matter. Human beings were never designed to eat sex hormones. Okay? Where would you get sex hormones in your diet except for eating raw testicles? Okay? So, no, when you eat testosterone, when you take testosterone pills, you increase the risk of liver tumors.
Whoa.
Okay, because what happens is your body doesn't know that this testosterone is a medicine. It treats it like a food, and it goes directly from your gut to your liver, and the liver is not used to handling big whacks of testosterone all at once. And that's why testosterone pills fell out of favor 50 years ago.
I didn't think you could get them anymore.
They may be ordering them from India or someplace.
Wow.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, no, it's an American company.
But you don't know where they're getting their drug. You got to remember, most of the generic drugs in America are made in China or India. Mm-hmm. We don't make generic drugs in America anymore. We send all that overseas. So American companies buy it wholesale from overseas, and they retail it to you. Okay.
I see. Uh-huh.
And so, but no, please do not take testosterone pills of any kind.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Yes.
I guess
that's
I'll
very
just
important.
Have to. Yes. You suggested a three like a statin and a P5 inhibitor and testosterone.
He's listened to us in the past. Okay.
Yeah, a PDE5 inhibitor. This is phosphodiesterase inhibitors. Phosphodiesterase inhibitors like sildenafil or tadalafil, they actually cut your risk of prostate cancer in half. So that, you know, I really like them as an anti-prostate cancer drug. And they relax the urethra and allow you to pee better. So you get better urine flow. They don't actually shrink the prostate.
Yeah, they improve blood flow.
Yes. Well, blood and urine flow.
Would atorvastatin take care of the statin part of it? Is it 20 mg of that I'm taking?
Probably. Again, I'm the guy on the radio. I don't have your cholesterol numbers or anything, and that's what atorvastatin would be for.
If I were to take testosterone, how would you suggest?
We normally use a transdermal cream, and that way by adjusting how much testosterone we put in the cream, how much cream you apply, how much skin you apply it to, how thick that skin is, how rich the blood supply of that skin is, we can move your testosterone level to anywhere we want it.
Is there another way besides that cream?
Yes. Yeah, sure. There are shots. There are pellets. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They can put a pellet under your skin, and you'll absorb testosterone for 3 months.
Yeah.
There's shots we can give you every week that will kick your levels up.
Why does it have this bottle of 60? Could I just down this bottle? Would that hurt my liver much?
I have no idea. I don't know what's in your bottle. I don't know how much testosterone's in there.
I would not recommend it.
Three four zero point two of the proprietary blend, 340.2 mg.
That sounds it's a botanical that's designed to try to raise your testosterone, make more testosterone. That's what it sounds like. Yeah. And those are not very effective. They usually give you about a 15 to 20% boost. When what you really need is about 150%.
Still bad for your liver, though.
I don't know. Oh. Again, a proprietary blend is a secret formula. They don't tell you what's in their blend. So I have no idea what their proprietary blend is.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're taking a mystery pill.
It's not a good thing.
As a physician, I'm generally opposed to mystery pills.
Those are not a good thing.
I understand.
Even though it's Halloween, well, it's not a good thing.
Thank you so much, all of you. You do a good public service, and we all appreciate it.
You take care.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for the call, Jim.
But, Jim, if you want it done right, there's this clinic I know of called Longevity Medical Clinic. This is what they do for a living.
And Jim, we have three locations.
That's right. So you might want to come and be a patient at Longevity where we can actually do it right.
Absolutely. Taking a break right now. We will be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine. Stay right there.
Wow! I feel good. Yo. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good.
No, he's not. He dropped.
And welcome back.
He just called and wanted four bags of Relief Factor.
Oh, there we go. Yes, yes.
Jerry, telemedicine.
I know, I was thinking the same thing.
We're on now.
Okay. Oh, yes, we're on the air. All right.
Welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine. Here's that number to call. Get into the call, Q206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757.
And now, as you can see, during the breaks, we talk.
Yes, we do.
We are not mummers. We not sit here and do Gregorian chants.
We catch up.
And get in contact with the universe.
Well, we should maybe try that, too. It might help us.
And as long as we're on that subject, I'm going to out you.
You are.
I am. For those of you who don't know, okay, my medical director and elegant co-host is...
Oh, thank you, Dr. Mixon.
I had the other elegant co-host. Dr. Umat is Hindu. Okay, she is from India. And so she is my brilliant Indian lady.
Oh, yes.
And she, in her religion, has a special holiday today.
Yeah.
And... Samira, tell us what the purpose of the holiday is today. I love this holiday.
Oh, yeah.
All you married men, listen carefully. Make your wives run over and listen to the show.
Well, in Hindu culture, especially in our area where we live, this day is for married women where we pray for our husband's longevity. So we fast, and then in the actually it's a fun day. Uh-huh. In the afternoon, the girls get together, they do prayers, and there are actually fun prayers, and then we eat one meal in the evening with the family.
Yeah. And by 5 o'clock, you have tea.
Yeah, and that's a tradition. You follow the tradition that you start the first time you do it. And when I first did it, my mother-in-law said you can have tea in the afternoon, and so I did. Okay. Some people don't. And some people drink water and some people don't. I don't drink water all day long.
Okay.
So just one meal in the evening after moonrise. At moonrise, you do your prayers again. And after moonrise, you can eat.
Okay. And you see, this is a tradition in wives honoring their husbands and praying for their health and longevity.
Yes. Very happy and very proud to do it.
Yes. Yes. This is wonderful.
I think it's a wonderful tradition. Let's see if we can spread this across America. Let's get wife in America praying for their husband's health and longevity.
There are so many Indian women in America doing it already, Jerry.
There you go.
We got to get it to us pale faces. Now, my wife, by the by, we had a variant on this just last night. My wife and I were chatting, and as many of you already know, my wife is 30 years younger than I. She's Han Chinese, and she seems to appreciate her husband. And she was talking about wanting me to have a long, long life because she said, you're an experienced daddy. I've had 9 children and we are raising our 12-year-old who was born when I was 65. And she said, I don't know how I would raise Ivory if something happened to you. So please, you got to stick around. So we were talking about things that we would love to do in the clinic, but can't do for everybody because they just cost too much.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those things is a total body MRI.
Yes.
Where you go in that MRI scanner and they start at the top of your head and they scan you all the way to your tussies.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's a multi-$1,000 procedure, which is why we can't run it on everybody just because a lot of people can't afford it.
Yeah.
So, we have to modify the program based on what folks can get. But, so we were talking about that. I said, sweetie, I'd really love to do this for every patient. but many of my patients can't afford it. And she said, well, you can afford it. Go get it done.
Go get it done.
And I said, well, but why do I need it? And she said, you're 77 years old. You're my husband. Go get it done.
So just like that. Sounds good to me.
She didn't pray for my health and longevity. She issued an order.
Go find out what's wrong with you.
That's right.
But along those lines, there are companies that are doing those scans, and
yes,
you don't have to have insurance approval for it. You just pay out of pocket. You go get those done.
But that's the point. You pay out of pocket.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are limits to what many people can afford,
sure,
especially now with 20-some percent inflation over the last 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, people are having to decide, do I buy groceries or pay the mortgage?
Right.
And so to say, here's a few thousand dollars more for your MRI, it's a bit much.
You're absolutely right. The grocery bills astound me.
Yes. And so, you know, I got a long list of things I would love to do for all of our patients that simply are cost prohibitive.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Now, as we take this program national, you know, there is that small percentage of people for whom cost is not an issue, and, you know, we can offer it to them. Hell, I'll offer it to anybody and everybody, but you just got to recognize it's not something I can do in the clinic for free because, A, I don't own an MRI.
Yeah, those machines are horrendously expensive.
Millions of dollars, not to mention the radiologists to interpret their studies.
Exactly.
But still, you know, there are things that technology permits us to do that we just can't do for everyone, and I wish we could. One of the newer things that I'm hoping will pan out in the very near future, Dr. Fay down through Stanford was doing a study on regenerating our thymus gland.
Yes.
You know, and his first studies from 2 years ago, 3 years ago, actually, were really fascinating. He's got a new one that was supposed to be published in September, but it hasn't been, and I don't know why. And I'm, you know,
and
frantic to find out.
That was with growth hormone.
That was
and
growth
DHEA.
Hormone, yeah, DHEA, metformin, and I think zinc. But they were actually getting the thymus gland to grow again and reform and start kicking out immune cells like a younger person.
Mm.
And it's that lack of immunity that's causing us older folks to get cancers and die of infections. You know, and he's got some people in this last study that are in their 80s. And so if we can actually regrow the thymus and reconstitute the immune system in people in their 70s and 80s, we have the potential to extend human lifespan, healthy human lifespan, for an extra 10, 15 years.
Absolutely, because as we get older, the risk for infection gets higher and higher.
And the risk of cancers gets higher and higher.
People succumb to both of these medical problems,
Right, yeah. And so, I mean, this would be a fabulous addition. But again, you know, the growth hormone is over $1,000 a month. And you got to take it for, you know, a year, 18 months, 2 years.
Sometimes I wonder if just doing part of the things will also be helpful, like just taking DHEA. For example, all of our patients are on DHEA, or pretty much all of them.
And a lot of them are on the metformin and the rapamycin. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're doing all the things that
we
can be done at a reasonable cost.
Yeah.
You know, but there's those things that are right out on the fringes that I'd love to be able to add that, you know.
But you know, Jerry, even in the years that this clinic has been open, we've changed so much. First, we started with just HRT and supplements. Then we started adding some senescent cell therapies, then IV therapies, then Viasure treatments, and exosome therapies and aesthetic treatments. There's so much more that we do now.
Yes.
Autophagy. There's just
when
incredible.
You look back at what we did in the 90s when we started the clinic, we have added an enormous repertoire of therapies that we didn't know about back in the 90s.
Right.
And we'll keep adding.
Because the science keeps changing.
And here's the good news. The cost keeps going down.
Yeah.
You know, those total body MRIs. When I first looked at those a few years ago, they were $4,500, $5,000.
Yeah.
And you showed me an ad this morning for $2,500.
Right.
It's cut the cost in half in the last few years. Who knows? Maybe it'll get cut again.
Yeah.
You know, and we can offer it to more and more people, I hope.
That's right. Yeah.
That would be the hope. All right, we're coming up on our next break here, so we invite you to stay tuned. And if you've got a question for the doctors, and Sandy, we lost you. If you'd like to call back, we'll get your call on as soon as possible.
I'm sorry, Sandy, you dropped off because I was doing my rant.
And Charlie, we will get to your call as well. Here is that number to call in. It's 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine.